Hi guys, Rohit from Everyday Empires here. I'm really excited about this episode. We've got four entrepreneurs for you to share their stories and to understand their amazing entrepreneurial journeys, some at the end, some just starting. So I'm really excited for you to listen in and see what kind of conversation comes out between the five of us. We hosted it at Kingston University, so we're very grateful for them and their facilitation. And I really want keen feedback on this because, guys, usually it's just a one-on-one, you know that. But we've got four other guys here. So if you prefer more entrepreneurs, you know, two, three, four, whatever it is, let us know. And we will try to fit that in for you in the further formatting of future episodes. For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy the episode. We have four wonderful panelists who I'm very excited to introduce. However, the best person to introduce them is themselves. So I'd like to invite Becky, who is the founder of Two Teaspoons, to come up and talk a little bit about her business.
Hi, I'm Becky. So I guess I had a bit of an unusual journey to running my own business. So I studied fine art for 4 years back in the late 90s, and fine art's quite an interesting, it's not really kind of businessy at all. You're basically left in a studio space and told to kind of create work for 4 years, which was fantastic. I loved it. And when I finished my degree, I decided to move to London to live with some friends, and I got two jobs because I wanted to pay off my student loan, and I started working for an organic food company. I don't know if any of you know Whole Foods Market, so Whole Foods Market used to be a British company called Fresh and Wild, and they had seven stores across London and in Bristol. So I worked for them, and that was, I just loved it so much because it was just when organic food was kind of on the cusp of becoming quite mainstream. And then at the same time, I also worked for a startup company that was run by a couple in Balham in London, and they used to run children's arts and crafts workshops. So I was just doing these two jobs, frantically working to just try and pay off my loan and kind of pay my rent and all that kind of stuff. But it's really interesting because both of those companies taught me so much. Like these two people that ran their own business back in, they'd already been doing it for about 10 years before I joined them. They're still going now. And it's amazing. My son is now 19 and is working for them in his holidays from being a student. So like that really showed me that you can run your own business from nothing, do something, carry on. And then with the organic food business, that was fascinating because it went from when I joined, we had one store, and when I left, we had eight stores, and then we sold it to Whole Foods Market. And then I left that company and worked for the guy who founded Fresh and Wild in a skincare company. So I went from working in organic food to luxury skincare. And then we started, we took that brand to the US, and we used to have it in Harrods, Selfridges, Harvey Nicks, and then we had it in the Sephora stores, in all the sort of premium department stores in the US. And then I was doing things like copywriting and package design. And then I used to manage the sales force in America. And it was a tiny company, but grew really fast. And when you work for a small company, you get to do a million jobs, which is really fun and quite scary. And then we sold that company to Dior, to LVMH in London. And at that point, my youngest son was just going to school, and I kind of just felt like I really needed to stop working a little bit and cut my hours back. So that was when I made the slightly foolish decision to start my own business, because that obviously didn't work, as in I didn't reduce my hours at all. But yeah, so I started off in 2012 and I started teaching kids to cook. So because I'd had that experience running kids' arts and crafts classes years ago, I thought, oh, I can do this. And I really like food. I know about food. So I just started at my local school. So you said start small. So I started doing one class and then kind of grew and taught in various primary schools. And I taught privately and I did millions of cookery classes. And then somebody tasted the food that the kids had made and were like, oh, my God, I really love your food. I'm starting up a new nursery for kids who are going to be outside all day, a forest school nursery. And she said, would you consider doing my catering? And I thought, well, I've never done catering before in my life, but I just said yes and thought I'll figure it out. And then, so I had like 15 children to cook for to start with. And now we're making 2,500 meals a week. So we've now got 14 nurseries in Southwest London. And so that's where I am now. I'm very busy. And we've got a team of 6 people now. So we're still pretty small, but that's us. Me.
I invite Angus to come on and tell him a little bit about himself.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name is Angus Cunningham. I feel quite exhausted.
I know, it's
your story. And thank you, Roy. It's very strange to be a case study. No one's ever done this to me before, but I do have a story. I'm from Scotland. My father was quite old-fashioned. I'm sandwiched between two sisters. And he decided that I should have a good education,
which meant shipping me off to boarding school. Sorry.
Lost the mic.
Oh, come back. Does it come back? Hello? Yeah, that's it. So I was sandwiched between two sisters. We were very close in age. And Dad felt that... the good education, that's kind of a bit old-fashioned going, isn't it, nowadays? But it still happened. My two sisters went to the local state school and I went off to boarding school at the age of 7.5, which is not a good age to get pushed out from home. 10 years later, I was fortunate enough to get into Aberdeen University to study land economy. And I took a year left between school and university. Big mistake. I enjoyed the freedom. I worked as a gatekeeper. I live in a very small village in Scotland. Mine is still growing. But at university, you had a choice and you could choose where you went to lectures. That never happened to me in the previous 10 years. Always and I got behind and I went completely off piste. And I decided to write a letter to my dad and saying I was going to London to make my fortune, which I'm still looking for, by the way. So here I turned up in London in 1984. With no clue what I was going to do. My parents were very sustainable. They lived off the land. Trips to the supermarket were rare. They were mainly for essentials. I had a good work ethic, but I had no clue what I was going to do. But coming from that gardening background, I managed to get a job at the Royal Hospital of Chelsea, one of the Chelsea Flower Show Hotel. I served a year's apprenticeship there before I joined the ranks of the self-employed at the age of 21, and I've stayed there ever since. I started off with a maintenance round in Wimbledon. It was tools on the tube, so it was really humble. And a little bit of advice, now if you want to make a lot of money, don't start off the garden, it's tough. You're at the back end of all building contracts and never any money left. Over the next 30 years, I can't believe I got to this age from this like a glamour. Over the next 30 years, the business grew. And in 2014, we were turning over £1.2 million a month. We had a massive overhead. And in 2014, if you remember, we were coming out of a recession. So it was 2008, 2014. And a big house builder, whose name shall remain nameless, but you probably come across him, Kerry, opted not to pay us a very large sum of money or to string out the payments. They were managing their cash flow and moved them. The people who suffered. And we ran out of cash. I couldn't borrow any more money. It's a very painful lesson. After 30 years of, hey, look at me, there's not the ego involved. I built the business up. You started to believe wrong publicity, which is a dangerous thing to do. So 2014, at the age of 50, I'd start again. So that brings us forward now. This is 10 years. I'm talking things going 10 years cycle. But now we start off as garden maintenance, and we've gone from not as more as commercial landscaping, domestic landscaping maintenance, which is good for cash flow. Now we do urban greening, so we combine planting with technology to bring biodiversity to cities. It's now a good market, very profitable. We maintain what we do, so we use artificial intelligence to keep our plants living in strange locations. We're a bit smaller, but I've learned a hell of a lot in our journey. I think some we'll share later on. There's a team of 20 now, so we've downsized, but I'm absolutely passionate about what we do. When I was at school, entrepreneurship wasn't a clear choice. It wasn't as glamorous as it is now. I've no idea from an entrepreneur. I can just say my journey and where I've been and where I'm going. But yes, that's my story, and there'll be a bit more coming out, I think, later on.
Thank you very much, Angus.
Hi everyone, I'm Kaylee, and I co-own Joseph with my husband. We've been going for about 10 years. It's definitely not something that I really had in mind that we'd end up there. He was a one-man band, left his company because he thought he could offer a better service, which he did, and he would work 6 in the morning till 12 o'clock at night. Our son, who is now 13, had just turned 3 when he went on his own, which is a scary thought in itself because you've got a child to then look after and mortgage to pay and everything else to do. So with that came all the hours. He then couldn't do all of the quoting, all of the invoicing. Then I learned to do that. So I actually came from a beauty background. And then I actually came here when I was about 19 to look at nursing. I ended up going to King's College, but I dropped out after a year because it wasn't for me. And then I actually started cleaning myself when I was pregnant with my daughters. I've got twin girls. Sorry, I'm very nervous. Sorry. And then it just came from there. And a lot of what I've learned is I had to do it. I didn't have a choice. You ask the right questions to the right people. If you don't know the answer, you can find someone that does. And I think a lot of it as well is grit. So you just have to do it. So I'd had a C-section with my daughters. And it was 5 days after. They were still in special care. But we had a vet bill that needed paying and returning. So 5 o'clock in the morning, I was there doing this VAT return. And that really teaches you, I think, a lot about yourself and what you're made of. It's not for everyone, which I know, because there's certain times where you just think, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Who am I doing it for half the time? but it is rewarding. Like the people that I work with, that I've come across, you see their achievements as well, which that is what I get. That's what gives me the kick. And yeah, we're mainly based commercially as well. So we're dealing with schools. I mean, my work is 90% of school work, facilities management. There's new sectors that we're going into now, which is what we're exploring. But yeah, that's... I'm trying to think what else I can add. I mean, I grew up on the circus, so you would have thought I'd enjoy a bit of wrist arms and knife thrower. Which, again, my uncle, Jerry Cottle, who some of you may have heard of, he was a big entrepreneur. I haven't actually read his book yet because I know that there's some naughty facts in there and I don't really want to take away from what I see him as. But he lost his business several times. He went bankrupt. But he just kept going and kept going. And he ended up, before he died, he owned Wookie Hole Caves in Somerset. Oh. So, which he's now passed on to my uncle and my auntie, and they're running it. So he just had... He was from a background of lawyers and family that did that. But he wanted to run away to the circus at 15, which is what he did. And then he became one of the biggest... showman that the country has. So I think maybe there's a lot of lessons there growing up that you don't really understand. I mean, I went to 60 different primary schools, so I had to learn quickly, I had to adapt, I had to see how people would relate to you and make friends quickly. So there's probably a lot of childhood things as well there that relate into entrepreneurship. Well, I'm here, I'm still going. There's a lot you learn on the way that you aren't taught, I would imagine, at business school. I don't actually have a degree myself, but I have a degree in a lot of lessons. But you can go and do further education. I went and did my NEBOSH 2 or 3 years ago now, which only has a pass rate of, I think, 3 out of 10. And I passed first time, which a lot of people won't. Not that I enjoy it, because it's health and safety and it's one of the most boring things, but it's so important. So JCERV is family run, and we're still, you know, husband and wife team, which, again, if you go down that route, there's a lot of lessons there as well. Other than that, I...
Thank you very much, Kelly. And last but not least, pass it back.
Thank you, everyone. So you all look amazing, because I had the view from there previous year, because I'm a graduate of Kingston University. I've done my master's in entrepreneurship and innovation management. And it was such a short but very interesting story, because it was just a one-year master's. By degree, I hold a BSc in industrial engineering. Then I had my MBA in supply chain management. And I started my PhD. Then I dropped out because my professor immigrated to the US without prior notice. So it was such a long story for me, up and downs. And during this time, I believe I started my entrepreneurship since I was 12. And I sold some homemade snack in the school. So then I noticed, it's enjoyable. And then somehow I started tutoring business in Iran, and then moved to the Turkey, Istanbul. I continued that. And then I noticed my dad was an immigrant to the US. He studied in Sacramento State University. So it was a dream for us to study abroad. And then I did this twice, and then I noticed there is a huge problem with this industry, with unethical guidance sometimes. And I started my business since 2014, tutoring mathematics, SAT, GRE, years, and then helping students to get admission to universities around the world. Then COVID hits, and we shut down, unfortunately. And then I moved to the UK and started over a few months ago. We are growing like you, but we just recently started. And I believe it will be a very interesting story when I turned 70. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We've got four very different panelists here, from different backgrounds, from different entrepreneurial mindsets. So I'm very excited about the discussion we're about to have. But even last, and even not by least, I'd like to invite Salewa, who is our wonderful host, to join us on stage as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for those that have watched the podcast, and I'm kind of looking around here, we ask all of our guests a question, which usually our guests don't get time to prepare for, but I thought I'd be nicer to you guys. I quite like you. And that question is, what is your biggest mistake? And whoever wants to go first can stick down.
So one of those questions I'll go ahead. Now, what I've been in business nearly 40 years, and I've made a lot of mistakes, and I reckon maybe you could average some. One a day, probably more like 5 or 10. But if I've made one mistake a day in 40 years, I've made 10,800 mistakes. So I'm obviously really learning a lot. My biggest mistake, though, was thinking that I could do it all by myself. And that was born out of wanting to prove to my dad that I want to disappear down to London, I want to go back to the forest. That was the 80s, wasn't it? I did actually come back many times to France.
But for 30 years, he started to lead your own ego, and the business got bigger and bigger and bigger, and 120 staff, and you know, over a minute could not turn over. It was all there in the top line, and it was all ego and glossy. But one thing happened. Yes, we were starved of cash, but if I'd shared with experts on that journey, not thinking I could do it all myself, and it would all be fine, we wouldn't have that crash, I don't think. It was a very important lesson, and most of my learnings came from that, going into administration because of that incident. And at that time, you have decided at 50, everything's all that happens now. What do you do? And I opted to carry on because I saw it was a failure. It didn't work. I was not humble pie eaten at that point. And then I met a business advisor, and then I met a business plan. And I knew a lot of common sense around this and what needed to be done. I never had the time to do it because I was so busy chasing the turnover. The biggest thing was not sharing, not feeling too proud that I couldn't share what we were doing. It caused us to go into administration, but the plus that would be massive. So it was a positive outcome. Emotionally tough, but it was very good.
I'll go next. So mine sound really morbid, but it's trusting people, which obviously letting go of things, you have to have a certain level of trust. But you learn very quickly, especially when it comes to money, not everyone has the right intentions. And when you've got children, distractions, when you're trying to do it all yourself as well, that if your eye comes off of the ball, that's when people will take advantage. So don't take your eye off the ball. You will have to give people, you know, enough space to grow with you, because I'll do it all yourself. So you do have to delegate and have to get help. But don't take your eye off the ball, because you've got a vision. You know, if you've got generally a good heart and passion, you don't really consider the money to be the overall game. You know, that for you is part of it. It's part of what comes with it. But when it's your business, it's your passion. You know, you put blood, sweat and tears into it. And when you've got someone that comes and sees that, but then also sees that you're generally a good person, you think, oh, I can get away with that. So I would always just say, just keep, if that's my biggest bit of advice, especially if business is about money, business is business. That would be my biggest bit of advice. I know that sounds awfully morbid, but it is so. I wish someone has gone, just have a look at what they're doing. Oh, no, I trust them. That's fine. Just double take. Just have a look. Make sure you're asking the right people for advice as well.
I was going to build on that, Kenny, because I really resonated with that. And when you were telling me just before that you were listening to a certain gentleman on the podcast, Jordan came to mind. Just for a bit of background for the audience, Jordan was an electrician, and built his business up very steadily, but started out with sort of doing up the homes for sort of residential homes, and started doing commercial properties, and then so on and so forth, and started doing the properties of 200, 300 flats. So built a business up to 45 people, 5 million turnover in about 4 or 5 years' time, which was incredible, absolutely incredible. Now, one of the things that we spoke about, and Kay, I think you hit the nail on the head, was that whilst business is business, you are supposed to put forward your values and how you do business. Very often, you will attract people who are like you as well. So whilst I was a nice guy, whilst Kay, you seem very lovely, you do attract the same types of people. So it's important that you evaluate who you're getting into bed with and who you're doing business with. But you'll find that your natural personality, your processes, how you want to do business filters out quite a few people. I think I want to make the point that you don't necessarily need to change who you are. You just need to be a bit more wary with who you're doing business with, because fundamentally, you've got operations, you've got people to pay, you need cash flow for your business to run. And if you're too nice to people and you don't keep an eye on things, then it can slip. So I think that's an excellent point. Thank you. Right. Atabak and Becky, you can wrestle for it.
Yep. So there's been a huge amount of mistakes and challenges, because the first thing is that for me, I definitely have learned everything on the job. So, you know, I said yes to doing this catering gig and then had to figure out how to do catering, how to scale things, all the legislation I had to abide by, you know, just masses and masses of stuff. But two particular things that I've had to really improve on, and they slightly reflect what you're saying, is that, like, negotiation, really standing your ground and really kind of believing in what you're doing and knowing what you're doing is really good quality and really, like, standing behind that. And I think, well, I didn't come from this kind of background, so I don't think it came naturally to me. But, you know, in terms of pricing and, you know, putting yourself out there and really valuing what you're doing, and I'm talking valuing in terms of pounds, that is a really big lesson to learn, because if you undervalue yourself, then you can't, your business, you know, and I've learned the hard way that way, because, you know, you think you've made a really big step forward by taking a piece of business on and you haven't, you know, charged the right price for it, and then, you know, you're paying for it later. So that is it's a constant learning. And I think when you start something yourself, and, like, I never set out with a business plan, and, you know, I always work for other businesses. And actually, to have to stand there and negotiate on your own behalf is quite a tricky thing to do, to really have that kind of confidence to say, yes, I'm doing something really brilliant, you really should be paying for it. So, I've definitely made a few mistakes like that along the way. And also, I have made mistakes about not seeing around corners. So I'm definitely probably need to work on my strategic thinking. I think it's probably a thing. I'm a bit kind of gung-ho and I say yes and I do things, but I don't always think how that might, you know, happen. I mean, I've been going for a lot of years now, so I'm getting better at it. Thank you, Michelle, who's my accountant. But initially, I'm definitely somebody who says yes to things before I've really thought it through. So, yeah, they're two really key things, I think. Mistakes I've definitely made. Sorry.
I want to build on that comment, actually, because saying yes and then figuring out later is quite a famous thing that I think Richard Branson sort of reports. Just say yes and just figure it out. And
he's got loads of money, he can say that.
Yeah, very true. But
it's an island.
He did say it at the start of it. But you're right in that his words have credibility now because of where he is.
I'm not saying it's all wrong as well, because I think part of the reason I've got to where I've got is because I did say yes. Yeah. But there's also been some really sticky moments.
Well, you foresaw my question. I was going to say yes and figure out later. It sounds like a bit of a superpower, because when you're taking calculated risks, maybe the calculation could have been honed over the years.
Yeah.
So how have you gotten better at them?
By making those mistakes. So you learn each time, and then you just do it a bit more carefully, or you think a bit more carefully, and also you gain experience. So, you know, after 1 year of doing catering for a small amount of nurseries, and then you grow, obviously, all the time, you never stop learning. So obviously, next time somebody asks you something or whatever, then you're much more well equipped to know the answer and to think, that didn't work out so well last time. So, you know, organically, I'd say.
So back.
Thank you. I made so many mistakes, I guess. But I would like to mention two main important ones. One was my business in 2019 when COVID hits, and it was a threat based on that SWOT. And we could change and we could evolve to online, but I was really burnt out that I didn't want to do that. So I believe evolving with the world change is something important, with everything evolving, AI, social media, new marketing tools, new finance tools, everything. I believe having that mindset of growing and changing and being open to change is very important, which I didn't have that time. And the second one, after you fail or you had a mistake, big mistake, I couldn't accept that, and it was overthinking, self-doubt, and becoming a perfectionist, that I wanted to sharpen my skills and everything, and I postponed the start of the business. But when I started, then I learned during the way, and I believe for me, like, having that self-doubt was the biggest mistake, and couldn't let the past go. So if you did something, I believe it's good to let it go and start it over with that experiences.
I think that's really well said. After that, I'm going to try and earn some brownie points here with my wife. So be careful, everyone. One of the biggest mistakes I've ever made is to not listen to Earshot. He's this lovely girl.
For the record, he still does not listen to me.
I'm still terrible. But what I mean by that is the humility that all of you answered this question with, I think, is telling of your experiences. And very often when you are a business owner entrepreneur, you're so exposed to everything that happens. One tiny decision you make on a Monday will have an impact 2 weeks later that you probably didn't foresee. But it counts as one of those mistakes you made on that Monday. And five is a pretty good average as well. But by my sort of slightly humorous comment about my wife, what Yesha is excellent at is reading people and understanding their motivations and basically saying if someone is saying nonsense or not. You can tell the kind of stronger word I want to use there. And I was very good at sort of, you know, rushing to the advice and wanting to provide value and being the superstar accountant and giving all of this free value out. And then Yesha would go, did you charge for that? Did you send an invoice out? Did you realise that he's probably not going to pay you even though he said he would? And 99% of the time.
100% of the time.
Debating. I probably should listen to you still more. She was right. And so bringing in the husband-wife dynamic into it as well, which we can talk about a bit later on as well, that was difficult for me to accept, being frank and honest. But you know, I have a very thick skull, and after my 10,000th mistake, and Yesha pointing out everyone, now it's gotten through. thank you very much for answering that question, because it just humanises your incredible success, and you're all very humble. So my job is sort of chair of this conversation is just to highlight how amazing you guys are, from winning multiple awards through to, you know, turning over millions of pounds. It is very clear there's a reason why you're here. And we talk about your mistakes because what I really want people to gain from this conversation is that we're all human and we all are ordinary people and we will make some mistakes, and some of them are huge and some of them are a little small, but they're still mistakes. And having the humility to push past that and learn from them is arguably one of the greatest skills you all have. So thank you very much, Rob. However, one thing I didn't hear, it was a mention maybe by you, Becky, a little bit, was that you didn't have an action plan, you didn't have a business plan that you would just write out 30 pages, you know, back-to-back style with his MBA, and it was perfect. You guys just got on with it. So if someone was sort of sitting here and starting out or starting a new business idea, do you recommend writing a business plan?
I don't know, because I've never written. Probably. It would probably be a really sensible thing to do. But equally, I think if you see an opportunity or get an opportunity to do something, then just give it a go. Like, I think throughout my entire career, I have never done really a job that I thought, I don't know what I thought I was going to do. I certainly didn't think I was going to do any of the things that I have done, but I've done them because I said yes to things and took opportunities. And I think it's partly because I'm super over enthusiastic about most things and, like, you know, I really want to do loads of stuff. But yeah, so a business plan is probably a brilliant idea, and it is my goal for the next 12 months to become better about planning. But yeah, I think it's probably a great idea. But equally, just say yes, try stuff, possibly go wrong.
I feel like it's still logically, but of course, you don't have a business plan because you don't know how many times you think, but you know where you're going. Well, I haven't written a business plan in 40 years. I feel a bit embarrassed saying that, but it's as you're saying, like, you see opportunities, you've got to be light on your feet. You can't. This is going to take a long time to write, and you suddenly feel you're stuck on the tramline. You can't be passionate. You can't, you know, my business was involved from garden maintenance, you know, tools on the tube up into urban greening and using up tech. And
there's a journey. We're at the business time for the maintenance, and why still doing maintenance? So I get the logic, and I'm sure, I'm absolutely sure it's for some businesses. And when I read a business plan, how to write, I thought, Tronky, that's really impressive. Why didn't I do one? I never had it. So I'm not sure, I know this is my whole journey, so I feel I do get marked down for not having written a business plan. But Kelly, maybe you have.
No, we have got better understanding what we possibly have coming in. So yeah, we've got the pipeline, and then we're trying to figure out how we execute it. Because Jay had a running joke with our accountant that, yes, I would double what our turnover was last year. And he's like, you can't keep doubling it every year. He's like, watch me. So he's done it. But now this year, it feels like, okay, we're going to do that. We really need a plan, which we don't have. But then I would argue, you know, get an argument. You think about it in your head. No, I'm not going to say that. That's how I'm going to do it. And that's what's going to happen. You come to having the disagreement with someone and saying whatever you want to say, but then the conversation goes another way. And that's pretty much the same as I have my plan for the week as to who I've got a Teams call with, where I've got a meeting, who I need to catch up with, you know, in the office. Then something else comes in that takes priority. And that's how I work and how I run well, which we've now learned in the office, is I seem to run better reactive than planned. If my day is scheduled, I feel very much like I'm at school. I don't want to have a to-do list. It's great for, obviously, you've got certain parts of the business that require that need the operations to run like that. But we're in quite a reactive sector as well, which got called out, there's water everywhere, the heating's not working at school, we've got no hot water for the kitchen. Yeah, right, we've got to move someone quickly. So business plan as a whole doesn't... Jay's always wanted to just reach for the stars and hopefully land somewhere. So that's kind of where we're going. As we get bigger and we scale, we do need to have some form of business plan. I think for someone starting out, you don't need to go, right, I need to sit and do this. The first thing you can do is just put one foot in front of the other and go, right, I'm going to do this. But that, I don't think you need a hard written business plan. And if you do, make sure that you're open with a pencil and a rubber so you can rub it out.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, they're very good points, because I had a business plan, but, and I'm sure they had a business plan as well, but not on paper, but here in mind. And they were open to evolve that, and I'm sure about that. So I had a business plan, because we had in our class with Abby, and we used that business model canvas, which was really, really simple. So my recommendation is don't complicate it, don't make it complex, and start very easy. Just put it on the paper with pencil, exactly, because you should change it as soon as you grow, because the business world is evolving, and that entity is a living thing, the business is living, and you have to change as soon as you can.
I thought you hold on to the microphone, because we've got three videos. I'll try and get through all of them. We've got little clips from the podcast, which I want to share with everyone. I'm going to ask the panelists one, maybe two questions on each of them. The fun thing is that the panelists haven't seen these, so you don't have to strain your neck. You'll hear it, and then I'll give you a little summary to give you time to react. But it could be interesting.
Right place, right time. Whilst we were setting up, there were probably 10 to 15 other 3D printing companies that were all setting up at the same time in the same city. 80% of them are gone now.
Just kick their ass or just...
Yeah, yeah. Either we outcompete them or they just didn't have the right strategy. 3D printing is a tool that if you have all the resources in the world, you can kind of do anything. We can 3D print architectural models, we can 3D print interiors, prosthetics, medical devices, engineering components. If you set up a business and you're under-resourced and you're trying to do everything, then you're going to really quickly start stumbling into problems.
So, a bit of context for everyone. That's Max Reynolds. If anyone knows their cars and their car design engineering, then you might know his father, Adrian Reynolds. But Max is a founder of two companies. One, Storm and Plunge, does what it says in the tin, is a spa company. It's a couple of sites now in East London. and Generation 3D, which is what he was talking about, which is a 3D printing company. So what Max was talking about there was about setting up his business, founding it, and he was about 23 at the time as well. And there are about 15 to 20 other 3D companies in Dubai. So he's in a completely different jurisdiction. You can tell he's English. Doesn't know the laws of the land. And he's having to set up a 3D company in which there's a lot of people in. So clearly he went, well, I don't care. I'm going to do it myself. And the rest of the story is for you guys to watch. But to the panelists here, have you ever cared about competition? And if you've had competition, how have you approached it?
So, yeah, I believe when you're out of any industry and you just do your desktop research, you found a business idea, and yeah, this is original, exciting, and nobody is doing this, and you do a little bit of research and you found that, yeah, okay, oh my God, this is huge competition. Oh, that one is doing the same. They received that investment. They are doing this. They are turning millions or billions even. But I believe, personally speaking, I added that personal branding to my business. I am the face of my business, and it is hard to replicate this. Someone can copy our business model, which is not very innovative at the moment, but they can't copy me. So there is always competition. And as he mentioned, you have to be in the right place at the right time. And I really believe in that, because I supposed to be in Canada doing my second years of master's, and I haven't received my visa on time, happily. And I came to the UK, and now I started my business. So I believe you have to be aware of the competition. Don't dive with your head on the stone, but don't be afraid of that. You can make it original. You can make it human and turn it to something big.
You all don't have to comment, but if you've got something, then
I've definitely got something to say.
Yeah, I mean, Jay left his company and then started off himself. I won't say the name, but that's where his name came from, because it was a running joke. Joseph, so it was kind of like a two fingers. I'm going, I will do this myself. They are one of our competitors now that we've kind of taken over quite a lot of the sites, but that has come with a service. So as long as I would say, don't look at what the others do. Let's just focus on what we're doing, because that's when you know you're going to give good service. But obviously it's out there. Price, it all comes into it, budgets. As long as you're still being fair and greedy, and your, you know, integrity is a big thing, and it's trust that builds relationships with your clients, then the work will always evolve, it will always change, so you'll always find work. That's, it's just, it's out there. There's so much out there that I don't feel that you need to have massive competition, because sometimes they actually come in and help. Can you help us on this project? So it's, yeah, that's how I feel on it.
That's a really good last point. In the early days of Scopescape, my business, and we didn't get work, you would meet. There's no backup, there's no fund. It was tools to, so I hated the competition. They were the enemy. They were always competing against the quotes, but now you always hear us, if you aren't going to get those, we won't get it. As I've got older, I found there's massive benefits, you're saying, to collaboration. We work with all our competition now. And it's actually very seldom we're pitching for exactly the same thing, maybe slightly different deals. But then if you widen your network is your net worth. Is that right? So that's what I found out at my right old age. So it's much more beneficial and healthy to work with the competition.
Wise words. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's been quite interesting for me, because we started off our first partnership with the nursery was this brand new Forest School nursery. And this was in 2016. And it was the first Forest School nursery in London, like first full-time Forest School nursery. So it had very particular parameters in terms of food safety. So I decided that all of our food was going to be vegetarian. So we're quite unique like that. So there's no other vegetarian catering company for early years children. And because we work with quite a few, we don't work exclusively with Forest Schools, but we do work with quite a few, then we've got a really nice niche. But now we've got a bit bigger and we're getting approached by other nurseries, the competition has suddenly become something that's much more on my radar, partly because, you know, I have to now be very aware of price because I work in a, like, it's a very sort of labour-heavy business, and nurseries themselves are very labour-heavy and they're very tight on their costs. So in terms of what a nursery will choose, you know, it could be the difference of pence between, you know, choosing us or choosing someone else. So really what I'm having to focus on is the fact that I can't always compete on price because we're small, but we're really different. And we have to really talk and really try and get through about, you know, what makes us special. And, you know, the quality of our products and the fact that we are different. So there's no point in me trying to kind of be more like the competition because that's just not going to work. I just have to find the right people who want to use us, which so far has been completely organic. All of our growth has been through word of mouth, which is really exciting. But we're just at the stage now where we want to try and grow a bit more. So we're trying to find ways of doing that. But yeah, it's very interesting with the competition. And there's a couple of kind of quite big nursery catering companies, but it's a very interesting position to be in now because you have to really think about how you're going to tackle that. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Right.
I haven't got the answer.
So the next slide is a gentleman called Ed Hill. Bear in mind his video, and he is an ex-Marine, so he speaks very matter-of-fact.
I had this approach from a guy that was one of the very first super yachts that I'd worked on. And he said, right, Ed, I'm now a captain. The owner wants security. Can you do it? I was like, yep, not a problem. Can you get out to Monaco in 2 weeks? No problem. I'll be there. Got off the phone. Shit. I can't afford to pay for my next meal. How am I going to get out to Monaco? A friend of mine, he gave me some labouring jobs. Weekends, I was working for cash in hand as a doorman. And I was selling stuff on eBay as well. There were a few times where I was like, I've got a master's degree. I'm an ex-Marine. I'm a sniper. Why am I here? And then give myself a slap around the face. And it's like, look, you're here because this is the situation you're in right now. It's not going to be forever. Suck it up. Don't be a job snob. 2 weeks' time, I had the money to get myself out to Monaco and we got the job. The owner then recommended us to his friend, who then asked whether we could start looking after his assets in London. Next thing, we expanded into the close protection and residential security.
So, have you ever had to slap yourself in the face?
Yes. I've got a really quick one for this. So, yeah, we had the first kitchen that I rented. Because I started the business in my home. And then when I moved to my first kitchen, I was like, oh, great, this is amazing. Turned out our landlord was a slightly dodgy character, didn't realise at the start. And he had been, he basically got evicted by the people who owned the premises because he hadn't been passing our rent on. So it was really, it was awful. So our business runs all year round. All of the nurseries that we serve are, you know, 51 weeks a year. And I can't afford to stop the business. If we stop production, we've got nothing. We can't serve nurseries. And it was a week before Christmas. And he told us we had to leave within the week. And so it meant I had to find a new business premises and somehow move everything in there and carry on cooking. And it was... like, that was probably a bit where I thought, oh, my God, I just can't do it. Like, somebody help me. But somehow he made it work. But, you know, I definitely wanted to slap. I had to slap. Well, I didn't actually have to slap myself, but it was very much that kind of moment where you honestly think, why did I choose to do this? But we did it in the end.
I'm struggling to think really proud of it. There was a story, we were putting a living wall up in Tehran. This was 3 weeks before Christmas. And I thought this would be exciting, head out to Iran to check out the measurements of the wall, and such was, gets me out of the office. We went around this massive building site, and at the end, I stayed there for 2 nights, checking all out, and flying back to the UK, then we'd start processing the order. I lost my passport somewhere on that massive building site. It's the biggest development in Tehran, just now, this goes to Tehran. It's not a great place to lose your passport. It took me a week running around this huge city with 23 million people, and it was just a small, it was all secondhand cars. It was like tremendous. I couldn't speak Farsi, so I was given a speaker and a taxi driver. We just went around all these government buildings dotted around, and I had no clue what was going on. But the British Embassy were great, but it wasn't enough for them to get me out. Anyway, I got out on Christmas Eve, and there was I left from Gatwick and I flew back to Heathrow. So my wife was about to divorce me. A lot of stress pre-Christmas. Anyway, we made it through, the business made it through, and we got out. But it was a bit of a touch and go. So not really a slap in the face, but a slightly worrying time for me personally.
So for us, it was obviously where I spoke about not trusting everyone or taking you off the ball. There had come a point where that had happened. You know, I've got three children, they were young at the time. There was someone in the business that I trusted implicitly, especially with our accounts. She went up away on holiday, and I thought I was doing a nice thing by making sure that everything was nice when she came back, because she was gone for quite a long time, and that's when I uncovered everything. So one day after her departure, which this isn't linked at all, our bank account was hacked and we lost everything. And because we were with the same, I'm with the same bank, it was business and personal. And that has got to be probably the lowest point that we ever got to in business. I just thought, how are we going to go on? How are we going to move on from this? It was 3 weeks of I was in the office at 4 o'clock in the morning, sending out what invoices I could. We were calling up, you know, our really good relationships that we've got with some of the academies. You know, they were paying invoices early for us. We had engineers that were offering to, you know, loan us money as well because they believed in us. So they didn't want anything to happen. So they were even saying, look, we'll help you. Don't worry about paying us this month. If you need any money, we'll help you. 3 weeks later, money's all back in the bank. Don't get an answer from Bob. This is what happened. And just, yeah, there you go. It's all back. So that was one of the hardest things. I don't think I've seen Jay cry many times in our life, but something that he worked so hard for, to feel that just gone, ripped from you. They didn't really give us many answers as to what had gone on. I still don't know what happened to this day because we didn't get any response. But that was a point where I just sort of looked at Jay and went, why are we doing this? Why are we putting ourselves through all this stress? I now see it as that it was a lesson, it was a distraction from what was already going on and what we could have, you know, what we've overcome. And I still look back and think, I look back on the date as well. I can remember the exact dates as well. I'm like, oh, it's been 2 years since that happened. So, and then you don't even think of it. Now it's another problem that you look ahead at, but you always find a way. I don't know how, but you do.
For me, I believe being too nice, you know, I'm very punctual with my payments towards my employees or anyone who I should pay, but I'm a bit shy to ask about the payments which I have to receive. So we are serving a client at the moment for more than 2 months. And he's supposed to pay us 2 months ago. And today I called him because I have to pay my employees the salary. And he said, oh my God, I have to pay it 2 weeks later. So I borrowed money from my brother, which is happily there. But I have to not be that much nice. And being shy and being that having that cash flow problem is definitely a problem. Also, I have nice employees, so they're waiting for 2 days now, but it's very embarrassing for me to not be able to pay them. And sometimes regarding saying yes to everything, that's another problem, which is really regarding the cash flow, related to cash flow as well. We had money 2 weeks ago, but we paid all of that for the ads. We received a client, we got a client, but we haven't got the payment yet. So that problem is still there. Being too nice and saying sometimes yes to everything without having the money might cause you a problem.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your stories. Final one, and then we move to the final steps. This is Tom Crook, who is a local entrepreneur, if anyone knows, Bob Nvidia. He asked me actually an interesting question.
At what point do you become a millionaire?
Mm. That's a really, really good question.
Thank you very much.
You have to think about your asset and liability, like your own personal balance sheet. The big asset everyone has is their own home, but often that comes with a mortgage. So taking that net position, if that on its own is £1 million, congratulations, you can say you're a millionaire. Now, whilst on paper you might be a millionaire, in reality you might be cash quite poor. We see that a lot actually in the SME world, where people are constantly reinvesting in their business in particular, and it's becoming quite valuable. But to realize that value, you'd have to sell your business. Selling a house, selling some of the other assets like cars or jewelry, you can do. But your business is the tough one. And that's where people, they might be on paper actually worth £3, £4, £5 million, so multimillionaires. But in reality, the business profit is there, but they're reinvesting and putting money back in to sustain the business. You probably need to have multiple millions to feel like someone who's rich and wealthy, which is kind of what the millionaire status is supposed to put in.
Don't worry, Palamis. I'm not going to ask you if you're millionaires. But I'm going to ask you, do you think that you've made it?
No.
Go ahead.
So for me, I want to get to the point of freedom, which sounds silly, but even I got home earlier today to get myself ready for this evening, and I was like, oh, this is nice being home at this time of day. It's having a little bit of it's running itself, but you know it can't ever fully run itself. I don't think for us either, depends on your entrepreneur mind, is it enough to be a millionaire? Because I don't think it is. I think because you have a passion, what you want to do, I don't even think that the money comes into it sometimes. I know that Jay refuses to see our bank account and the balance sheet and anything else because he's not interested in that. He's interested in doing what he loves and what he does. As long as it all falls in and it all works, he doesn't care. So everyone has their different priorities. For me, it would be a little bit more freedom. For Jay, I don't actually know because he's still on this rocket ship to Mars with it. But for me, it would be having multiple sources of income. Not millions of pounds. I don't want to be off in Barbados every week, but just a nice, steady life that you kind of dip in and out and different ideas. Okay.
How I make the million?
Have you made it?
I believe financially not yet, but I've seen this in family and that encouraged me really, really much. So I can't lie because money is important. And I believe, as you mentioned, from a certain level, which Warren Buffett said it's around 100K, after that, your happiness can't be related directly to that money you're earning, but for somehow you need that money to operate both personally and business-wise. And regarding the milestones, I believe I set the milestones kind of a little bit ambitious, which is challenging for me because we had the conversation with Bernice. If it's boring, then I have to change to another shiny object. But when it's challenging, it keeps me working on that. And regarding what you said regarding the being out this time, I'm working from the first floor in the business school, and now I'm familiar with all of the security, which is closing the business school in the weekends. 9 p.m., they knock on the door, ask me to leave, and that's the time I leave. So that shows that I haven't made it financially yet. But I'm almost there because I see the traction, I see the clients are out there, and it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Just to press, you know, I won't ever end. If you're passionate about it, you'll still be working on it. I sorry to disappoint you. I don't believe there's a goal at the end. I think we all love what we do. I certainly do, and I've been on quite a journey, and I'm still on it. And as long as you still want to learn, and you find your calling, what you actually really love doing, it's not work. So that is the goal, to be in that spot. Unless you've got the energy, because you're a lot younger than me, you'll carry on doing it. I'm still pretty resilient. I went early, but at 5 o'clock in the morning, I do my best thing from then. But there isn't a goal. It's like climbing a hill. You set yourself on the hill. When you get to the top, there's another one. And just enjoy it. I don't think you'll ever just stop. Okay, you're a person. You're an entrepreneur.
But it'd be nice to have freedom of different things. Because that's like you with this shiny object. You kind of get that mindset. You're like, oh, what's that? What's that?
Yeah.
And you kind of want to... So you want the freedom to be able to go and do those things, I think.
Yes, and money does definitely give you choices, but in my list of 10, it's probably a 5. Personal happiness, you know, the journey of God is not more important than money. It was super important at the beginning. The Maslow said, for me, I like the difference between cash flow and profitability, because if I didn't have cash flow, I literally would need to. There was nothing there. So you can be profitable.
I don't really understand the difference, but that was a really solid graph.
For me, if I'm talking in purely practical terms, you know, sometimes I think, oh, yeah, it might be nice to work a bit less, you know, a bit more time for hobbies or something. But actually, I think that what really excites me and that I see as my big goal is, like, having a small business is a massive opportunity to kind of influence in a way. You know, it's small. I mean, I've only got 6 people who work in my business, but we can create a business that we really want to work in and that's really positive in the community and in everything that we do. And I think that is the beauty of doing something like this. Like, it's really hard and all that jazz, and you're probably never going to make loads of money, but the reward is the fact that you can give people good jobs, you can create a really positive place to be, you can choose to do loads of community outreach, you can work with charities, you can do whatever you're passionate about. You know, we're really passionate about food and getting our, you know, really good food into more people, more children's mouths. You know, that is a really exciting thing, and that is, for me, like, a massive, wonderful thing to be able to be part of, because if I was working for something else, I might not be able to choose what I was doing. So that in itself is like a reward, a big, great thing. And, you know, I think also employing people, small businesses, employing people in the local community is a really powerful thing as well, because I'm able to offer everyone who works for us at the moment only has to work 4 days a week. Everyone has a family or like caring commitments or whatever it is. You know, we've created that because that's important to us. It's little things like we've built into the business that everyone has a free lunch every day. So nobody has to think, oh, I've got to pack a lunch and, like, you know, think about that as well. You know, it's all these little small things that we can do to make working at this small business a really positive experience for them. And for me, that's massively rewarding, and probably more rewarding than, I mean, obviously I want to be profitable and I want my business to be secure, but those things are the things that make probably give me the most reward and happiness for doing the job that I'm doing.
Thank you very much. There's a couple of reasons why we put this reel up. One is, I don't think we talk enough about money, and I think I don't want to shy away from the fact that the most successful people in the world generally are entrepreneurs, generally are people that have built something special, sold it for potentially millions, maybe even billions. That reward is there. It's very difficult to make that kind of money as an employee, as a salaried person. However, as you've just heard from all 4 panelists, and I definitely didn't send this to you beforehand, it's not really about the money. Perhaps it's number 5 is Angus articulated, but very often it is lower down on the list. Why? Because they started these businesses not because they wanted to make a lot of money. They wanted to start these businesses because of the vision, the values that you could hold, the amazing people that you could hire locally. And honestly, a little bit of those businesses are part of you guys. They're extensions of you. Becky, you just articulated right now those values that you wanted to give people great flexible working, and that you wanted to give them lunch, which makes sense as caterers. But actually doing that and executing it and doing it for, doesn't matter if it's 6 or 60, the fact that you're doing it is down to you and your values.
Yeah.
And you know, similar stories for the rest of the panelists and for other SME business owners. That's why I really believe in these stories. It's because we get to hear samples from these lovely people about executing their values. And yes, cash is important, but these are operational functions of your business to make it sustainable, to do more things, to do more projects, to reach out to more people. Very rarely would you hear a true entrepreneur wake up and go, I want to have £1 million in my bank. Maybe it feels nice, but at the end of the day, if you use that £1 million to go and build another business and hire more people and do more projects, it's not just a function of having it in the bank account. Although I'm sure you guys would say it's quite nice. So we're going to wrap up there. We wrap up with one final question, which we ask every guest in the podcast, and we're going to ask our lovely panelists here. And you have had time to prepare for this. So that question is, if your 18-year-old self had a conversation with your 18-year-old self, what would that conversation be about?
Who wants to go first?
Not
me. I'm not making it to 80.
I was a bit confused. Yeah. I was confused when you sent that
word. It was whether the 18-year-old was talking to the 18-year-old, or whether the 18-year-old, then you said it actually is not a right or wrong. I think if I'm going to do it from 80 talking to 18, I know that the 18-year-old had energy and was ambitious but wasn't quite sure which direction to go. I would say you're going to have tough times. It's uphill a lot of the time. It's enjoyable. You're outside. Imagine yourself in the beginning. Surround yourself with a team that have like-minded ideas, but also a cross section. You can't all be the same. So, what's it? Neurodiverse? Is that the economic? Anywhere on the spectrum. But as long as you're different, you can have a chance of getting there. As I said earlier, there isn't a goal because we love the journey. And be prepared to be resilient because the climb's steep, the weather might be crap. Go forward. So, yeah. Don't give in. I stopped the same industry for 40 years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been challenging times, but yeah, it's going to be tough, but keep going. That would be my advice to my 18-year-old self.
So for me, I think it would be learn as much as you can from as many people as you can, all the diverse people that you can meet. Learn as much, be in as many rooms with different people. Put yourself out there. I think when you're an 18-year-old, you're still finding your feet in the world. Say yes. Try it. Don't like it, it's not for you. There's always another, you know, there's people that I know that have lost their businesses in a bad way. They've been in a bad way. And then you see them a couple of years later and they're like, no, that was a part of my life. It's, I think people need the courage to try it. So I would say give it a go if it's not for you, then. You learn, obviously, don't put your finger in a boiling pan of water, that sort of thing. But if it calculates risks, if it seems like it's doable, give it a go. So I think I wish I'd known that back then, because I think, I mean, I did try do it myself, but I didn't ask enough people the questions. I didn't have the confidence to execute running my own salon or having a cleaning business that was huge, which I could have done because I had a lot of contacts that I was starting to do builders clean. So had I did fall pregnant, so I blame that one. But yep. Had I not done that, it's having the confidence, which not everyone is in a privileged situation either. And I'm not saying that we were. We had to make it work. So again, that's a grit and give it a go. If it doesn't, find something quick, think on your feet. You know, sounds awful, but after finishing uni, I was on the job centre. I was there for 3 weeks, and then I found another job. Take what you can, and then find what you'll do after that. But give it a go, and at least try.
Yeah, so I wish I could tell him, dude, we made it. And regarding the all up and downs, I believe as you mentioned, it's about people, I guess. The more you meet people, the more opportunities you have. Someone provide you with knowledge. Someone provide you with work experience. Someone introduce you to a client. So I believe I will tell him to meet more people and be in more rooms. And when you are in doubt, just think about the next step, not 10 steps later or 100 steps later. Just take the next step and you are safe. Don't worry. Don't worry that much. Worst case, you lose a business, you lose some money, and you start over. In most cases, it's possible. And don't, don't doubt yourself. That's the main thing. And try one more round, because Mohamed Ali Clay said, just one more round and one more round, and he won. And I believe try once again, and that will be fine.
And Becky, hopefully you make it to Aussie.
Yeah, hopefully. Or not, maybe. I would say that if I was speaking to my younger self, that I think try everything. Really quite reflective what you just said, Kaylee. Give everything a go. I encountered definitely quite a lot of snobbery about some of my job choices initially when I first started, and it angered me so much. And I think the worst thing you can do is underestimate different types of jobs and what you're going to learn from them. I learned more working in pubs, on the shop floor, working with all sorts of different people than I think you can. Yeah, I don't want to make a claim, but it's really valuable stuff. So be open-minded, work really hard, be positive, take opportunities, and you know what, you'll figure something out. I think planning too far ahead can kind of, maybe make you feel disappointed if you don't get there. Just take opportunities and give it a go.
Those are very wise words to finish off the panel discussion. Thank you very, very much to our panelists. I think that deserves a round of applause.